People have smoke detectors in their house. People even have carbon monoxide detectors in their homes. Why don't they have a weather radio?
That might have kept people from dying during North Carolina's deadly tornado. It's this time on Weather Brains. James Spann says it's not just up to our government leaders to keep us safe from severe weather.
The issue that nobody wants to talk about is that the public has some responsibility in the warning process.
Also this time, a little bit about James's least favorite weather warning system.
Personally, I'd like to go take every outdoor warning siren and dismantle them and put them in a big heap and burn them.
Plus, the month of November is producing some pretty wild weather.
If this were August, I'd say we got a tropical storm here.
Here in Alabama, we need to keep our eyes on what one computer model is starting to suggest about the future.
Next week, it is latched onto the idea of a major storm, which can do a lot of different things.
Also this time, J.B. Elliott on the snow forecast that didn't come out quite right.
We almost got run out of town.
Plus, the week of Thanksgiving. The Weather Brains crew shares personal thoughts about reasons to be thankful.
I think for all three of us, even though we all have problems like everybody else, we're pretty blessed here.
It's all coming up. Welcome to episode number 43 of Weather Brains, the weather netcast that's all about the weather, produced by the folks with the Weather Company in Birmingham, Alabama. I'm David Black saying thank you for being with us, and a hello as well this time to James Spann, the lead meteorologist with ABC 3340 Birmingham. James, what's up?
Hey, David, I am just delighted to be here. Great time of the year. Thanksgiving getting close. It's a wonderful week.
It is Thanksgiving week, and we are thankful as well to have Mr. J.B. Elliott on this netcast as well. Mr. Elliott, how are you?
I am the same as I was last week at this time. I am fine.
Well, sometimes in the past I've asked you how you were, and I'd get a partly cloudy report. So if you're fine, that's better, right?
Well, C plus. That's as high as I get.
You can aim for a B. You're a good guy, and you've been taking care of yourself. I ran into you not too long ago, and you were looking good.
Thank you, sir, and you were too. And Mr. Spann was out at my place today. Happened to do some troubleshooting on my computer. In fact, he was doing all the troubleshooting. And
he's a computer guru.
He sure did leave me in good condition. I really appreciate it.
Yet something else to be thankful for this Thanksgiving week. And speaking of Thanksgiving week, guys, how about just a little rundown of the weather for the next several days? We're recording this on a Tuesday, the 21st, but we know folks will listen for the next few days. So what about kind of a little advanced look here at the next 5, 7, 8 day time frame?
Well, I think the next 5 days, David, is kind of a no-brainer, thank goodness. We can have some wild weather this time of the year, but it looks awfully quiet. Where we are in Alabama, we should be dry for the next 5 days with just a gradual warm-up. The most interesting storm right now is one that's off the South Atlantic coast, and I'm looking at the radar composite here, and if this were August, I'd say we got a tropical storm here. It's not a tropical system, it's a cold core system, but I'm looking at winds on the coast, and they're still running at 40 miles an hour, JB. You caught some pretty good wind gusts on those observations today, didn't you?
Yeah, there was a 19-foot wave, too, at one of the data buoys off the North Carolina coast.
Wow.
But it's just a very impressive cyclone that's off the South Atlantic coast, and you can see just these feeder bands flowing into North and South Carolina, and they're going to get some really big rainfall amounts and high wind on the coast, and that's just going to move slowly northward. But the big story, I think, for Alabama is next week. On our podcast next week, or netcast, I think we'll have some interesting weather to talk about.
Uh-oh, is this another one of these situations with the old GFS advertising potential doom?
Oh, yeah. You know, like one of our buddies in our conference said today, you know, the GFS is like a soap opera. It's always got something going on. And next week, it is latched onto the idea of a major storm, which can do a lot of different things. The European is kind of on it, too, so both models have latched onto it. But I could easily see it being a setup for strong to severe storms in the front end and really cold air on the back end, and how we get from, you know, the warm sector into the cold sector, a lot of questions involved in that. But the SPC guys do have much of the state in a risk for severe weather on the day 4 through 8 convective outlook. That's one of the new experimental products. And also the CPC has us in their hazardous weather outlook for next week for severe storms. So we'll watch for that. And, you know, the most interesting possibility, David, is this. And I'm not saying this is going to happen. You know my deal. This is voodoo.
Okay.
Anything beyond 7 days is voodoo. But one of the model runs today hinted of an outbreak of strong to severe storms Tuesday night or Wednesday. And then we get a chunk of colder air following that. And then another impulse rotates down in the trough and a storm spins up in the Gulf and then moves up the Atlantic seaboard like this thing and with cold air in place. So, you know, the snowmongers are going to be all over that.
And that can be a model for a classic winter setup down here, right?
Oh, yeah. But the only problem, this is late November and early December. It's not January. It's just a little early in the season for that. And I'm not overly pumped about that aspect of it, but I do think it might bring the chance of some strong storms and a pretty good shot of cold air. So we'll see. It's going to be a really interesting season, I think, David. I think it's going to be a season of extremes, and I think if you average out all the numbers when it's all over, it might be near normal, but that's not going to tell the story. We'll probably have some very mild snaps and some very cold snaps this season.
When you and JB are writing the forecasts in a situation just like this, James, is it not always just a really tough call because of placement of the lows, whereas, you know, 50, 75 miles to the south or north, it could completely change what happens in any one given area?
Oh, yeah. You know, if the event were tomorrow, all right, if we're 12 hours out, we would still be struggling with that, JB. me and JB have been around the block a few times, and we've had nights before winter weather events trying to figure out the track of a surface low, and it's a booger, isn't it, JB?
Probably pulled your hair out.
Sure is, and usually the band of heaviest snow is not more than 50 miles wide. So if you're trying to forecast 2 to 4 inches of snow 3 days in advance and the path of your low gets off just a fraction, just a small percentage, by the time it's moved 3 days, that can be a pretty good percentage, and you can completely miss it. I remember a case not too many years ago where we forecast 3 inches of snow on day three, and we got 3 inches of snow, but it was at Childersburg. We didn't get a flake here, and we almost got run out of town.
I was just going to say, you probably didn't want to advertise your name in the grocery store for that.
Negative.
But, you know, it's always that way, right? I mean, I know that we have a lot better computer modeling, and you have a lot better technology now for forecasting, but bottom line is, has it really changed that much from, say, 10 years ago, trying to figure out where a 50-mile-wide snow band is going to wind up?
Very, very difficult.
Yeah, I think it's a little better, David, with the modeling. This high-resolution modeling, like the WRF, this WRF model, is a lot better grid resolution and time and spatial resolution. I think that's going to help, but it's so far from perfect. And as you know, the Birmingham DMA, the designated market area, is huge. And in any given winter storm threat, I guarantee you somebody's going to be delighted with all the snow they get, and somebody's going to be just mad as could be because it didn't snow at their house. And, you know, trying to define within that vast territory exactly where the strip of heavy snow will be is very hard to do. And the other thing, and I've said this on here before, David, my main concern for the cold weather season is the fact that we're simply statistically overdue for a big ice storm. The last one we had was January of 82. And I'm not saying this will be the year. I'm just saying we're statistically overdue. And the computer models stink at that. And, again, hopefully the better resolution with the WRF will help this year, because to set that up, you've got very shallow cold air. And sometimes the cold air is only a couple of thousand feet deep. And the warm air goes on top of that. And a lot of times the old models didn't have the resolution to handle that shallow cold air. So those things are always tricky. But, and, you know, winter's like a, you know, driving a car through a minefield. You never know when you're going to be blown up, but the best you can do is the best you can do.
Well, you know, you guys have talked about in the past about November being such a challenging month to predict the weather in Alabama. And I know, of course, the spring months when we have the spring tornado season are something you've got to really watch closely, and that can be tough. But would you say November or December would be the toughest time frame typically to call weather here?
November's a transition month where you don't really have distinct warm spells or distinct cold spells. They fluctuate back and forth, whereas in December, January, and February, you usually got cold air predominating most of the time. So you don't have as much, you don't have as many baseballs coming at you from so many different directions.
It's really a time of the year, as you guys well know, where anything can happen. And I look at different parts of the country, and I don't know what it's like to forecast in other areas. I don't know really what it's like to forecast here, but you have to keep your guard up for anything, it seems like.
Sure do. And how about that thunder snow in downtown Charleston this morning?
Amazing. Yeah.
I wonder if the guys on TV had that one pegged the night before. Who would have the guts to go on Charlotte television the night before in November and say we're going to have thunder, lightning, and snow all at the same time the next morning?
I've seen that before here, but it doesn't happen very often.
Yeah, I mean, you might have an inkling, but having the guts to say that on television, in front of a big audience is different. But that is a classic example of cold core, upper level low weatherman's woe. That is a very, very deep cold core system with dynamic cooling. We had snow flurries here from that thing over East Alabama, and that's just weird city. So November is a rock and roll month.
They were getting sleet this afternoon in Norfolk with 49-mile-an-hour wind gusts.
So needless to say,
I mean, 49 degrees, rather.
So for anybody who is heading up the East Coast for the Thanksgiving Day and then into the weekend, the days afterward, they're in for some pretty nasty weather, it sounds like.
James, I believe the QPF was calling for up to 8 inches of rain total along the North Carolina Outer Banks. Is that correct, or did they back off
of that? Wow. It had 8.5 inches.
Gracious.
And thank goodness that is the exception rather than the rule for the country. Much of the nation is going to have pretty quiet weather for the big travel day and the Thanksgiving holiday. But for folks in North Carolina, South Carolina, it's going to be wet and really windy on the coast with this nor'easter kind of thing just slowly drifting by there.
Well, speaking of North Carolina, sadly, 8 people dead, 20 more hurt from the November 16th morning tornado that roared through Regalwood, North Carolina. That's about 20 miles or so northwest of Wilmington, real close to the coast. The National Weather Service's Wilmington office conducted a storm survey and assessed F3 damage for nearly a mile of the 7-mile path of destruction. We spoke with Michael Carapace Polo, who's the meteorologist in charge at the National Weather Service's office in Wilmington. People from his office and other community officials are trying to deal with a problem there that is all too familiar here in Alabama. I understand some folks, Mr. Carapolo, are saying there was no warning when, in fact, there was a warning in effect.
That is correct. We initially put out a severe thunderstorm warning at approximately 6:21 a.m., and that was followed up with a tornado warning at 6:29. I think the perception here comes from the fact that a lot of the people in the trailer homes did not receive the warning because they had no way of getting the warning. A lot of people were sleeping at the time, they didn't have TV or radio on, and if none of them had a weather radio, there was no way they were going to receive the warning.
How do you deal with people who don't come up with ways to be aware of severe weather before it hits?
That is a concern we have with the Weather Service, and we try to work with our partners, the emergency managers, the local sheriffs, the police officers, police department, and also with the media. We disseminate the information and hope that with our partners, the information can come on out and get to the folks that need it. No weather radio is probably the best way of getting any sort of weather information, being that 95% of the country is under the dome of a National Weather Service no weather radio transmitter.
The headline in the Star News Online article about this mentions that the twister hit early without warning. What's your reaction to that?
Well, that was taken out of context, exactly. What happened is that when the writer was making that comment, when he was writing this down, apparently there was one lady that said she didn't receive the warning. And when she was asked how come, she goes, well, I was sleeping. I had no TV or radio on, so I didn't receive the warning, so it hit without warning. And then he took that and just took it out of context, and obviously that makes the front page of the newspaper.
Does this make your job harder, being in the National Weather Service? Is there a perception that you didn't have a warning out now when, in fact, you did?
No, I think it's been well documented by other news agencies, other newspapers, that there was a warning in effect. It's just that, again, with just one person saying that, that's what some of the media folks kind of harp on to kind of sensationalize the event. It's unfortunate, and it's a problem that the Weather Service has to deal with. As far as any time we issue a warning, we disseminate it and just hope, that people do get the message that we're putting out, that there is a warning in effect. And when we go out and we do our public education, we speak to the public, we try to tell them that the best way to get this information is to have your own no-weather radio. It does turn on by itself, and it can alert you and give you the valuable time you need that will help save your lives.
Now, there was about 8 minutes or so between the issuance of the tornado warning and when damage was first reported. Is that right?
That is correct.
I guess you would have liked to have had more advance notice, but that's easier said than done sometimes.
It's very difficult with the radar. What you're looking for is basic tornadic signatures in a supercell. And by the time you get that, you might only have minutes to react. For this part of the country, an 8-minute warning is probably as best as you can get for this type of tornado.
There have been calls for the presence of weather radios to be made mandatory in mobile homes. In some parts of the country, there are efforts underway to obtain that legislation. What do you think of that?
It's probably not a bad idea. Another thing we're trying to work with is maybe some of these smaller communities to have the tornado siren. So once the people in the emergency managers department get the message from us, the warning from us, that they can set off the sirens.
Well, when it comes to people not having weather radios, we have the same problem here in Alabama, too.
The problem, too, is also that at the time of the day that most of these severe weather events occur, if they're occurring in the overnight period where most people are sleeping, they don't have access to a TV or a radio when they're asleep. And unfortunately, this was the case here in Riegelwood. A lot of people that in that community said they were still sleeping. They were just about getting ready to wake up for their morning commute and their morning routine that they got the warning. Some of them received the warning, and matter of fact, a couple of people commented that they got the warning and they got out of their trailer house and it actually saved their lives. So they got it just in the nick of time. But most of these severe weather events that occur overnight, there is actually no way for people to get the warnings unless they had a no-weather radio that went off automatically.
Well, we have smoke detectors to alert us if we're asleep if a fire breaks out, but we don't have weather radios in a lot of cases anyway.
No, and that's unfortunate because when we go out and we do our public education, we actually harp on that issue. We say that people have smoke detectors in their house. People even have carbon monoxide detectors in their homes. Why don't they have a weather radio? A weather radio has been proven to save people's lives, especially when events occur overnight. The radios are especially designed that they can be turned on automatically when the National Weather Service issues a warning for that particular county, so people can gain valuable minutes that will actually save their lives. In this case with Riegelwood, the initial severe thunderstorm warning that went out at 6:21 would have alerted the people that there was severe thunderstorms in the neighborhood, in the region. And that was followed up 8 minutes later by the tornado warning. So in essence, people could have had maybe a 16-minute warning for this tornado.
Michael Carapolo, meteorologist in charge with the National Weather Service in Wilmington, North Carolina. Something positive might still come from the tragedy in Riegelwood. Carapolo tells me there's a big push on right now to encourage residents there to give weather radios as holiday gifts in the hope that more people will get information that one day might literally save their lives. So we have the same thing happening around here sometimes.
Yeah, that's a great story, Dave, and a great interview. It's so sad that the media, it seems like it happens every time, no matter how good the warning process works. They're going to find somebody that's going to say, I never got a warning, and that's the headline, tornado strikes with no warning. And that's exactly what happened to those guys up there, and it's happened to me so many times that I've lost count. So, it's very sad, but the truth was what we heard there. There was an excellent warning. The people just didn't hear it. And the issue that nobody wants to talk about is that the public has some responsibility in the warning process.
Exactly.
David, I get the idea that some people, unless a government official comes, bangs on the door, pulls them out of their house and puts them in some kind of government underground shelter, they're going to claim they just didn't get a warning. And people have to be involved. And that's the reason this weather radio thing is so important. And I wish I had some good research on what percentage of Alabamians have one, but I'm afraid it would be awfully small, way less than 10% if we really knew.
Well, there's certainly no way to argue against having one in your house. I hope there will be a day when, it's not an issue anymore and we just don't hear about people being blown away by something they never knew was even a threat.
Yeah, and the other issue, the sirens. In fact, I posted an article on the blog right before we got on the air here about the headline of the blog post, "Do We Need Sirens?" And I have long had a distaste for these things. Personally, I'd like to go take every outdoor warning siren and dismantle them and put them in a big heap and burn them. because
James, tell us how you really feel.
Well, look, here's the deal. I mean, and I think it goes back to the last generation, but people have this built-in thing that before every tornado, if the warning process works, I'm going to hear a siren. And that's just dead wrong. Sirens have never been designed to reach people inside. They're designed to reach people outside. And we've got to get this siren mentality out of people's brains. And, you know, the best way to do that is just take them down. And we're spending millions and millions and millions of dollars buying these things, where that money could be, you know, go to make for inexpensive weather radios for people to have. And look, this is 2006. This is not 1950. That's a whole different world we have out there with cell phones and all the possibilities of warning people. But anyway, and I'll say this on the blog post. I had an EMA guy in Etowah County that took a little offense to what I said, and he supports having sirens out there. And I put his whole letter up there, which was well thought out. So if you want to read the point counterpoint, it's on the blog.
I read that a few minutes ago. That was good.
Okay. Well, it's probably a debate that is going to go on for a long time, and there's a lot of money in siren grants, and maybe that's part of why we see government pushing them pretty hard. But I guess maybe I ride the fence here on this to a degree. I really see the value that you, James, and you too, JB, talk about in weather radios. And, you know, I guess if it was a perfect world, we'd have money enough to buy both, but we don't. And
in the earlier days, you know, the weather radios were not programmable, so
right.
You could get warnings.
And they probably still have a bias against them because of that. Maybe not enough people realize that you can customize the settings on them nowadays.
I'm sure a lot of them do not realize that, and also they may be fearful of them, afraid they cannot program them correctly, but they're easy to program.
Yeah.
My wife threw ours out the window.
Well, I've wanted to do that myself a time or two, but, you know, that's not the point. It's supposed to wake you up. Don't you want your smoke detector to wake you up in the middle of the night if it smells smoke?
Well, the problem was that, you know, back in the old days, before you could program these things,
it
would go off when you had a warning 100 miles away in some cases, and that's what frustrated my wife, and a lot of people just got really frustrated and just, you know, quit using them.
But if you live in Blount County, Alabama now, you can set it to only go off for Blount County.
That's right. You program in these FIP codes and you're in business. So we've got to educate the people that the technology is new. They don't wake you up in the middle of the night when it's raining and, you know, Timbuktu, and that they're inexpensive and they just work a lot better. So hopefully with education, we'll make some forward progress. But I just have this funny feeling it's going to take a tornado tragedy for the weather radio in the homes to really go up in terms of a percentage here. I hope that's not the case, but, you know, it's typically human nature.
Somebody in our office made the terrible mistake one time of setting off the weather radio alarm for a freeze warning.
Uh-oh.
That created a huge uproar.
Yeah, I can.
At 4 o'clock in the morning.
Yep, when they send out those new forecasts. What is that, every morning at 4 a.m.? Is that when those new ones go out?
Yeah, they used to go out about 4:10. I think it's about the same time to go out now.
And do you know, David, when JB set that alarm off, he had to walk out of the weather service with the nose and glasses thing to disguise himself.
So either that or he took a grocery sack to work and carried it over his head when he walked out. Let's jump to the listener email box for just a minute, guys. John Talbot in Hueytown writes he would like to hear a little bit of explanation about a term you guys have both used quite a bit, negative tilt, storm, or trough.
Well, when you look at a map, and often when I do the videos I show on the internet, the typical upper level I will use is the 500 millibar chart. That's one of the standard pressure levels, and that's about 18 to 20,000 feet off the ground. And we look for those big dips. You watch those lines, and they really dip down, and it's sharp. That's a trough. And ahead of the trough, you've got rising air motion. And a positive tilt trough, the axis is tilted from northeast to southwest. A negative tilt trough is tilted from northwest to southeast. And what that does ahead of it, it increases difluence, and that's where the winds part. And then simply it increases the upward motion. Anything that can add to the upward vertical velocity of parcels of air, that's when you can really have enhanced thunderstorm development. And the negative tilt troughs offer a lot better lift because of the difluence as opposed to positive tilt troughs.
So when you see a negative tilt trough and you've got a developing low coming in at the same time, that's watch out time.
Yeah, negative tilt trough is very favorable pattern aloft for severe weather if everything underneath that falls into place, the instability and the surface features and all that. So that's one of the pieces of the puzzle, and it's often a clue that you got some real trouble coming. So when you hear us talk about negative tilt upper trough and a severe weather setup, that's kind of a red flag deal there.
And it has a whole lot more punch to it, too, swinging around that fast.
Yeah, I mean, I don't have research on this, David, but I bet you go back and look at all the major tornado outbreaks in the state here, at least on my watch over the last 25 years, a large percentage of the big ones have come with a negative tilt trough setup here.
Okay. Another email from a listener, Ryan Melberg in Appleton, Wisconsin, asking about the software that's used in television weather in the commercial weather industry. How does ABC 3340 decide which software to use? With an upgrade, how much is taken into account when the on-air graphics change? Is there a public reaction when they change for the better or worse in their eyes? Also, how's the trade-off made with behind-the-scenes functionality versus on-air looks? James?
Well, that's a good question. You know, we really don't talk a lot about the television side of this, but, you know, that's still the core of what we do. It's television weather, and all television stations typically have a big hardware-software combination package from one vendor, and really there are only about three big vendors in the country now. There's been some consolidation. The two biggest players are WSI, which stands for Weather Services International. They're a company in the Boston area, and the other is a company called Weather Central. And they're a company up in the Midwest. Our stuff here comes from WSI. Now, years ago, we had the Weather Central stuff back when I was at another station. But for the 10 years we've been here at 3340, it's been WSI. And just for the geeky, the computer geeks in the crowd, it is a network of computers that run Linux. They have multiple core processors in all of them, and they're Intel boxes. In fact, they're manufactured by Dell, running Linux, and
no Windows.
No Windows with the graphics stuff, the WSI stuff. Now, our Baron software from Baron Services for the radar, that is Windows-based. For the SkyCam, our live cameras around the state, that is Windows-based. For the storm alert map that pops up on the screen, that's Windows-based. But the primary stuff you see during the weather segments, that's coming off of these Linux boxes. And that offers, obviously, a lot of stability. And to render the animations, it takes a lot of computer processor power. You know, for rendering a fly-through animation or just the seven-day forecast, that's a lot of pixels going on there. So, but we have a contract that's up every 3 years, and we review things, but we've stuck with WSI the entire time for graphics. And they do constant software upgrades and stuff like that. They're a good vendor, and we got a rep out of Atlanta that we like, so it's pretty good company.
Sounds like you have a lot of computers in the old weather office.
Oh, man, you wouldn't believe this place.
I mean, is there room for JB to sit in there when he does severe weather coverage with you guys?
Well, now that he's lost all that weight, you know, I mean...
That's right.
I mean, you barely notice the guy here. I mean, but, yeah, we probably have about 30 computers back here, David, all doing different functions, and it's just amazing the stuff that goes on back in here. You know, you look back when we started, remember that Apple IIe?
Mm-hmm.
You know, we've come a long way since then, and I guess in 25 years we'll look back on this and it'll be primitive, but it's amazing what goes on back here.
I'm sure that we'll look back at high-speed internet as we know it today and laugh at some point down the road.
Oh, sure. Don't you know?
Well, this is...
Gee, when I retired in 1989, the huge network computer system that the Weather Service had was a crawl like an earthworm as compared to what just a personal computer will do now. It was amazing.
And AFOS.
AFOS. The big blue boxes, right?
We called it the big blue goose. And we had a situation one night, you know, it was set up on a network basis on a chain. And so we were the main node in Alabama, and Atlanta was the main one in Georgia and Memphis and Tennessee and Jackson and Mississippi. But if one crashed, for example, we crashed one night and we in turn crashed Memphis, they in turn crashed Jackson. Jackson in turn crashed Little Rock. Little Rock crashed Fort Worth, and Fort Worth crashed Albuquerque before anybody noticed what was going on. We were supposed to go offline when that started.
Man. You know what happened there, David? That crash started when JB was trying to order a pizza online there with that thing.
That's probably what happened. Fess up, Mr. Elliott. Fess up.
That's it.
Well, fess up, guys, real quick for me on something else, if you'd care to talk about this. On a purely personal note, this is the week of the year when Americans pause and say thanks. JB, let me put you on the hot seat.
David, we've got so many blessings that we need to be thankful for that it would take a dictionary to list them all. And I'm eternally thankful for good health and for my family and for being able to work in weather. I always wanted to work in weather when I was just a kid, 7 or 8 years old. In fact, I got interested in weather at about age 5. And it was one of my main passions, along with wanting to be a newspaper reporter and a photographer and wanting to be in radio. So it all sort of came together in one thing, and I've had a very enjoyable lifetime working.
I'm glad to know life's been good to you. Mr. Spann?
Yeah, I'm like JB. I mean, I am blessed beyond my wildest imagination. And people ask me, how you doing? I always say, I'm just happy to be alive. And they look at me like I've had a bad wreck or something. But
you mean it.
I'm telling you, I felt like I have never had a real job in my life. And one of my greatest fears is that one day I'm going to wake up and I'll have to go get a real job. I mean, I have been doing this for so long and had so much fun. And I've worked here at this place for 10 years where they just leave you alone and let you do whatever you want to do. It's just in the broadcasting industry, that is unheard of. So I'm thankful for my family and you know, my wife. We've been married 25 years. This is the 25th anniversary this year. And let me tell you what, those weather widows, man, you know, that's not easy. And she's been a weather widow for a long time and hung in there. And we have two children, one that's two boys, one's 22 and one's 9, as weird as that is. They're 13 years apart, but we're all in good health and just very blessed. And every day is a gift, so a lot to be thankful for.
In my 32 years in the weather service, we change shifts every week. We'd work a week of days, then a week of 4 to midnights, and then a week of midnight to 8s, and change off days every month. And Judy virtually had to raise our two kids through much of that time, and I'm just thankful for her, too.
All right, David, you're on the spot, buddy.
I have to echo something that you said, James. Every day is a gift, and I pride myself in doing what I think you guys are already doing, and that is just looking around at my life and my environment, looking at things that seemingly would be inconsequential, would be trivial, that you'd never think twice about. And I think to myself, I'm really glad that that's the way that that is. And, you know, corny and hokey as it sounds, I am glad to have my health, to have a roof over my head, to be able to do so many things that I enjoy in my life. And I have a wife that is an absolute gift from above. We just have a tremendous marriage, and I am so profoundly thankful for that, among many other things. I could go on for 30 minutes, but you know, I'm in the same boat with you guys. I just I don't take little stuff for granted. I really don't. And you know,
she's a jewel.
Well, thank you. And you've got a great family too.
And don't forget your little puppy.
He would never let us forget him, as you know. But you know, James, this goes back to my years in television news when I worked with you in weather, and I did weather part of the week and news part of the week. I was kind of weird. I was a strange hybrid kind of person, did both. But in the news business, whether it's television, newspaper, whatever, you are exposed every day to so many situations of human suffering and tragedy. And it's the same way if you're in law enforcement or if you're in the medical field, working in an emergency room or whatever. But I saw so much suffering and sadness around me that it's not hard to come home at the end of a day and say, wow, I am thankful to be who I am, where I am. So that's,
you know,
what I'm
one
thankful
of the,
for.
I wear a lot of hats, and a couple of my jobs involve, well, one is healthcare. I don't talk about this publicly, but I'm the chairman of the board of a major hospital here in Birmingham, Trinity Medical Center, and I typically walk the floor at least once. I say the floor is, it's a huge facility. And you're right, David, in that job I see people that are struggling so bad in so many different ways. And another hat I wear, I'm a trustee and the president of the trustees of the Alabama Baptist Children's Homes and Family Ministries, and families are in just pure crisis here, and I see so many bad things happen. So,
and you know, John Croyle with Big Oak Ranch, I'm sure.
Yeah, John is a very close personal friend, and
somebody,
you know,
we ought to get him to tell some of his stories sometime. They'll put your hair standing on end about.
Yeah, and you know, the cool thing about Croyle, he doesn't care who makes me. He doesn't care. I mean, he's just going to tell it the way it is. And
right.
I just saying that there's a lot of trouble out there. So for I think for all three of us, even though we all have problems like everybody else, we're pretty blessed here.
Amen to that. You guys have a good Thanksgiving.
We'll do it, David.
If you would like to send an email to us here at WeatherBrains, our email address is question@weatherbrains.com. We'd love to hear from you. If you'd like to leave a voicemail for us, our phone number is 206-339-5482. 206-339-5482. And a reminder that the opinions you hear expressed here are not necessarily those of ABC 3340. For J.B. Elliott and James Spann, I'm David Black. Thank you for listening. We hope that you will be able to join us again for the next edition of Weather Brains. Weather Brains is copyright 2006. All rights reserved. Adios. Guys, y'all go have some turkey later on there and enjoy it.
Great show, David.
Enjoyed it. Thank you all.
All right.
Unusually good.
It was fun.
Great job.
This was a good one. See y'all now. Bye-bye.
Good. Bye.